Okay, we're going to start with a nice word on Parsha Metzora. Again, talking to a camera, but a good way to communicate with people these days. So I saw a nice word in Oil Yankov, I think that's from the Dumna Magid. He says on the Pusik Vihivu El HaKoyen, right, a person talks to Shnore, he has to come to the Koyen. So why does a person have to come to the Koyen? What's the whole idea with the Koyen saying if he's Tumah or Tuer? So he explains very nicely that when somebody speaks to Shnore, speaks bad about someone else, it's because he doesn't understand the value, the importance of something he's saying. Right? He thinks, okay, so I just said something, what's the big deal? He doesn't realize that when you say something, it has a huge impact, a huge effect. And the whole koyach of a person is the fact that he can talk. The whole difference between a person and a behemah, right? We call it a chai and a medaber. The whole status of a human being is the fact that he can talk. He can communicate with his words. Now, if a person doesn't realize what that is, so he thinks, okay, what's the big deal? See, he brings a lushna medrash. A person says, I only spoke lushna hara, nobody knows about it. He says, like this baruch haviyadaya shani shalach malach vi'oymed etzlech v'koysev kol mashat medaber l'chavarichu. I'm sending a malach who's standing near you and listening to you, and he's writing down everything that you're saying. And it's not just that he's writing it down, but it actually becomes a kitrug, as we know. So you're actually doing a lot when you're saying something. But because the person doesn't realize that, so what happens is, in order to teach him the chshivas of a dibber, he has to go to the koyen. And all of a sudden he sees what a dibber could do. Everyone can see that he has a nega, can be very clear, but the koyen didn't say tumai, he's not yet tumai. As a matter of fact, he could be a chusin, the sheva bruch, so we're going to wait a week, and he won't be tumai until the koyen says it. And then when everyone sees the nega went away, until the coin says tour, he won't be tour. And same thing by nega batim, right? The coin standing outside, you take everything out. And only then you say tumah. Why? Because until then, it's not tumah. And hopefully that's something that will teach someone the importance and the value of a word. And now he'll be more careful not to speak bad about other people. And, you know, this is so valuable because whenever people don't get along, almost whenever, almost anything going on between people, anything about relationships, it's all about what people say. Now, I know sometimes it's just about attitude and a cold shoulder or what you're not saying, but so often it's about what you're saying and you're hurting someone's feelings with saying something you shouldn't be saying. And so often when things are good, it's because someone said something nicely. And I'm not talking now about the love language of words of affirmation specifically. It's just so much of communication and relationship is all about what you say or don't say. And it's interesting how you learn the importance of you know, how detrimental a bad word could be from how good a good word could be. Right, you want the person to see the coin say tuha to understand the, you know, what happens when you say tuma. So sometimes, aside from understanding how hurtful a bad word could be, it's important to realize that, you know where you learn that from? From a good word. So instead of saying something bad, you say something nice. And every time you wanna criticize someone, you say a compliment instead. So you're not only avoiding the bad, but you're actually promoting something so good. And if only we would put more thought to saying nice things to people, coming up with nice things, looking for opportunities, say something nice, to compliment. So often we take things for granted. So often, I was just talking to a parent the other day, and you know, this was something that was both going on maybe in Chayder, and I was suggesting. You know, the question was that he's such a good boy. He knows that his Rebbe thinks so highly of him. So why doesn't he want to go to Chayder? I said, you know what? Maybe he's taka such a good boy. He knows his Rebbe thinks very highly of him, but he doesn't hear it so often because at the end of the day, there are more challenging children that take more attention from the Rebbe. So he's sitting at the side and, you know, going unnoticed. And even though he knows that his Rebbe thinks he's a very good boy, but he's not hearing it. And the Father told me, you know, it's so interesting you point that out because on Purim I went to give shachmunas to the Rebbe, and the first thing he said was, you know, he's such a good boy. Sometimes I mamash forget he's in my class. And that's exactly the point. And sometimes you think that it's a given that I think something nice about someone or that I think highly of someone, but you don't verbalize it, and the person doesn't hear it enough, and that alone could be something lacking. And it's just something to never underestimate the, you know, the importance and the impact that a good word can have. So let me read a question. It's part of a letter and part of another question, but I'm just going to go to the second question that I got from this writer. The school is asking me to teach my daughter how to be geschickt. Okay, for those who don't understand Yiddish, I got some comments lately about people who tell me I throw in too many Yiddish words in my English classes. So geschickt means to be like swift, quick moving, get things done quickly. The school has asked me to teach my daughter how to be geschickt, do things quickly and fast. She's got a good head and all, Baruch Hashem, but she's very relaxed. I don't think a 5-6-year-old needs to be efficient and fast-paced yet. Any tools? Thank you, and so much for your shiurim. Okay. So it's a good question, and let me start with a disclaimer. I don't know any details other than I'm saying. I often mention this because, you know, sometimes I'll say something assuming that we're talking about one situation where a child is, let's call it 60% relaxed, and in the meantime I'll find out later, no, you're talking about a kid who's so relaxed and only 10% functioning at 10% speed, let's call it. So my disclaimer always is I don't know anything about this, and everything we discuss is just for the public, just ideas, and of course it has to be applied correctly. And very often that will only be when you discuss it with someone one-on-one and they know the details of the situation. And I think it's important again over here to say that, because the term normal or quick or slow or all relative terms and could be misleading. So one thing I just want to mention over here, because the wording goes, you know, again, it could only be the wording. I'm just mentioning it so nobody, just to point out. The school is asking me to teach my daughter. I don't know who the school is. If the school is a principal, or the school is a meeting of teachers and principals who discussed the idea, or it's one exasperated young teacher who doesn't know what she's doing. It makes a big difference already. You know, sometimes somebody can say something about your child and the person's simply inexperienced or doesn't understand the situation properly, and then you don't have to take it so seriously. Sometimes it is a school suggesting something, which means that it was discussed, and in comparison, you know, it's taka, something that's already problematic or concerning, and that's obviously just something to take into consideration. Now, we're coming from Pesach, and one of the lessons of Pesach that I mention often is the idea of chanochel nara pidarke. Right, we all mention that as a pusik and mishle, how you always have to teach each child based on their nature and based on their level and whatever it is. But really, it's a pusik in the Torah. Keneged abu bunim debre Torah. We say in Naguda, right? Ivishta teaches us to address each child according to his status. We're calling it right. And the Torah actually gives us four different ways of addressing them. The Torah doesn't just say figure out a way to do it. And we learn from Madrash that it means each child separately. No, the Torah gives us different approaches, and we mentioned in Naguda different ideas for each child. So that's already something about understanding that each child could and should be different, right? Children should be different. It's okay. Every child has their way, and based on which child that is, that's how you're going to be treating them. So the whole idea of average and the idea of everyone fitting into a certain mold and, you know, well, this is the norm, is very often misleading and mamish incorrect. I'll tell you, mamish incorrect. You look at an average, and it very often we understand it to mean, well, this is average, so everyone's expected to get to the average. Obviously, it's above average, but the average is like, that's what everyone should be achieving because it's average. And it's not that way. I don't want to say that some should be doing less than average, but the idea of an average is that, yes, very many fall into that category, and there will always be those that don't. And that's all that, you know, average is, we're not talking about statistics of apples and oranges, we're talking about children, we're talking about people with different capabilities and different natures and different styles and different life, and that's how people are. And it's important to compliment and accept each child for what they're good at and see the good in them and see what they, and not just to try to average them out. You know, there's that famous, I must have mentioned it already a few times, about the animal school. It's a famous writing about the somebody who's trying to teach all the animals to be the same, right? Teaching the monkey to swim like the fish and the elephant to the... And obviously it doesn't work. Everyone's different. And that's where people, you know, make the mistakes. We have to understand the natural qualities of each child, work with that, and understand that, you know, what's easy for one is hard for the other. Now, of course, we'll talk in a moment about how to try to get each one to achieve more and get better at things that's harder for them. But it's always going to be that way, and it's okay. So if one child is struggling more in a certain thing, and for him, you know, after putting in the effort, he only got to a certain level, I mean, that's fine. Now, of course, when it comes to running a class and a school, there's ways to deal with this idea, and there's only so much you could do and so much you can do, and there has to be a certain level of. But the idea of, well, this is average, this is what people are expected to do, it's very often very misleading. And what happens is, very often, when you start complimenting a child only when he gets to a certain average, even if he could, and he overexerts himself, so even when he does, and he ends up getting the compliment, but in his mind he only got the compliment for doing what was hard for him and what was something someone else was doing easily, or something that, like this, he reached a certain, you know, thing, but nothing else he got complimented for. All the things that he was good at, right? Well, whether it's the diligence or just the you know, thinking things through and all that, you know, that wasn't appreciated because it wasn't quick enough. And when he did it quick enough, that's when he got the compliment. What happens is, even when he ends up getting the compliment, but what was he taught? You get the compliment when you could achieve what that person could, or when you get to a certain level of other children, but the things that you're good at, or things that are your qualities where you shine, you know, that's not appreciated. And why is that? I think each child deserves to be complimented and appreciated for what he is, and that's very important. Now, forget about the ones who don't end up achieving, and they don't end up getting the compliments. That's even worse. I'm saying, even when they do, it could still be a very misleading message. Now, I had a personal story with one of my children, and I mentioned this many times in the past. And I got a call from a mechanech once who heard a course of mine and was upset that I mentioned the story. And I don't know, I'm mentioning it again now anyway. So here goes. I got a call about one of my children who wasn't reading quick enough the Ivra. Now, the way the phone call went was that, you know, most children are reading X amount of words a minute, right, a certain pace, and he's reading a little less, a little less. Now I say a little because it wasn't half. It was a little. It was a little less. And my first question was: is he fluent? Is he making any mistakes? Is it hard for him to read? No, not at all. But a little less than the average. Now here's a perfect example. Okay. Now there is such a thing as something concerning when a child is too slow. I'm talking about less than the average means that most kids, most people, read at a certain pace. Now, just to humor the person who called me, I said, you know, Tosher Rebbe, Zecharon Lebracha was still around then, was still alive, I think it's Tosher Rebbe, I said, Tosher Rebbe reads a little slower than my son. And I was just kidding, but the point was, why does he have to read quick? The fact that most kids read quick, that's fine, but that's good to leave it for most kids. We'll always have those that read quicker and those that read a little slower. So if a child's not fluent or he's having a difficulty reading and that's why he's reading slowly, that's something that has to be addressed. But the fact that he's not quick enough because most kids are reading, you came up with a number that most kids are doing and you're trying to squeeze everyone into that number, why? Now, Machanech once heard that and he told me I'm wrong because no, it's not the way it is and there is a certain level that everyone's supposed to achieve. Well, I'm not a Machanech, I'm not a Malamed, I'm not a Manal, I don't know, I could be totally wrong. All I know is that it's a few years later and I wish he'd read a little slower these days. Okay, so that's all I have to say for that. Bookshelf, he's reading fine, and a lot of times I tell him to slow down. Now, and just to get back to the point, I think it's fine if we accept children for what they are. I think it's fine if some children are quicker, some are slower. And when we're trying to average them out and make them look all the same, I think that's very often definitely a problem. Just recently I was talking to someone who, you know, again, with the whole corona thing, so all the kids are home, so there are those kids that are geschickt and moving along, getting things done, either they're playing or they're learning or whatever, and then there's one who likes to sit on the couch. Sitting on the couch. How long can you sit on the couch? And everyone's getting nervous. Why are you sitting on the couch? Why are you sitting on the couch? So I'm not going to go into the fact that it's a circumstantial thing and it's a short-term thing and sometimes you don't have to make such a big deal about it. It's going to pass. And you go, but let him sit on the couch. Some kids like to sit on the couch. Now, if he sits on the couch more tonight, is it a problem? Of course. But the fact that he's sitting on the couch more than others, that's not the problem. The fact that most kids are doing something and he likes something, it's okay. We're not going to fix them. We're not. We're not going to fix people. We're just going to batter them and show them that they're not good the way they are. That's all very often all we accomplish when you start trying to change people. It's we need to be accepting. And interestingly, some kids thrive with corona. Just to mention it, I was dealing with a parent who had one child who was doing relatively very well in Chayder, and another one who was doing pretty poorly, struggling. This one, that one, tutors, getting up in the morning, going to the Chayder, the bus, and everything. And interestingly, Corona came around, right? Irish has his way of running the world, and Irish tells him we should all just be finished with it and see a big yeshiva for Klal Yisrael. And all of a sudden, things changed. The one who was doing so well in Chayder, because he needs routine, and he felt good, and he was accomplishing, and he's diligent and intelligent, and everything was going, all of a sudden, there's no Chayder. Doing very badly. He wasn't doing well. He didn't know what to do with his day. He wasn't this, you know. He wasn't motivated, and he wasn't interested, and it was a shock. How could it be a kid like that? He's like, oh, just sitting around all day, not getting up in the morning all of a sudden. And his brother, all of a sudden, was doing fine. He was getting up. He liked diving on the porch. He felt good about himself. He was accomplished. And this one's in the pajamas now. What does it go to show? It goes to show that some kids have different ways of thriving. Now, are we going to ask Hashem to keep Corona around? Of course not. Are we going to start homeschooling one kid yet? Yeah, also not. But just to remember that the cookie-cutter approach just doesn't work. So when a kid's a little less geschickt, sometimes it's fine, as long as it's not problematic. As long as you remember. Yeah, I saw a joke somebody mentioned about the four sons in the Haguda. Okay, so when you translate it in English, we're used to saying there's the wise, the wicked, the simple, and the one who doesn't know how to ask. So in today's terms, it would be the gifted, the behaviorally challenged, the learning disabled, and the Asperger's. Okay, so a cute joke, and it just, you know, the simple meaning of the joke is that today we have new terms for everything. In the olden days, it was just the Chokham Rusha, Tom and Shine, the But I think it's more than that. I think that the joke actually says something. Today we have a problem accepting that one is the Chokham, the Rusha, the Tom, Shine, like, okay, so there's four kinds of kids. No, this one must have an issue, this one must have a problem. In other words, it's not the way it should be. He must have Asperger's. He's not asking questions. He must have Asperger's. He must be an autism spectrum. Somebody, oh, this one's a little simpler. Oh, it must be LD. Must have a learning disability or special ed. Oh, this one, why? Why does it have to be that way? Why can't we just have four sons? Why can't it just be that the Eibishter gives us different kind of children? I think that's fine. Now, interestingly, the only one in the Haguda who we're trying to really change is the Rusha. Because when someone's wicked, we try to help them out. Okay? But other than that, they're all just addressed for who they are. Now, this is not about complacency. It's not because the Tom is always going to stay a Tom and the Shiny Delish will always stay a Shiny Delish. And Mitzvah Hashem, next year, the Tom will be a Chocham,
and even the Rusha will be a Chochem, and the Shayin Darishal will move up to be a Tam maybe. But the idea of first addressing them the way they are, accepting them the way they are, and slowly encouraging children to go forward, praising accomplishment, making incentives, but not basing everything on that, and not accepting them only when they'll be that way, and not focusing and emphasizing only that. And I mentioned this often. A person's supposed to break his nature, a person's supposed to thrive, a person's supposed to grow. So often we try to do that for other people because we can't do it for ourselves. Okay, we get so comfortable where we are, so we're trying to change our kids, or trying to... When you get older, it's easier for you to work on yourself. Children, when they're younger, need a lot of encouragement and acceptance and compliments and love, and they'll end up growing healthy enough to want to challenge themselves. But when we're just busy challenging them the whole day, you know, very often we just do the opposite. And another thing to remember over here, okay, is very important, is, you know, the joke about somebody who called up in the house, and the woman picks up and starts asking questions about the house, either selling the house or buying the house. I don't know what exactly how the joke goes. He's like, I don't know, Harry doesn't want, Harry this, Harry that, and Harry likes more this. We're talking about Harry, and at the end, the questioner just got nervous. Why don't you just discuss it with Harry and let me know? Oh, Harry's only 2 months old, so I can't discuss it with him. You know, sometimes you don't realize what you're talking about. I mean, this question over here about a kid that's not geschickt enough is 5-6 years old. Now, at age 5-6, and very often we all make this mistake in some ways, at age 5-6 we don't realize that it's less about achieving geschicktkeit and being quicker, and more about nurturing a child and making them feel good. Now, again, it's not, you know, obviously there are things that at age 5 and 6 are also not acceptable and have to be worked on and should be worked on, and when you get a kid too used to something at age 5-6, you'll end up seeing it at age 9. It's true. But in general, sometimes you have to realize this, and a lot of times people don't realize this. Often when I hear questions from people, and I would guess, I don't know about this questioner because it's a school, but very often I get questions about young children, I often guess correctly and correctly that it's the person's oldest child. Just now I had someone who came to me after the Pesach Seder, a child who's behaving a certain way, but a Seder, how could it be, but a Pesach Seder, I wasn't expecting that to happen. Very often you'll hear such a question from somebody who is dealing with that, that's their oldest child. So people who have questions about three-year-olds, what do I do with a three-year-old tantrums? It's because the three-year-old is the oldest child. So they're dealing with a three-year-old tantrum and wondering what you do with it. By the time you have a 10-year-old child at home and the three-year-old is tantruming, so you're tantruming. So the three-year-old's tantrum, I see. By the time you have a 15-year-old bucher and your 11-year-old is not davening so nicely, it's okay, so when that's 15, he'll daven. When you have a 15-year-old bucher who's doing something that you don't like, but he's your oldest, like, oh, I thought he's grown up already. And that's often how it is. People look at their oldest child like the grown-up, and they're expecting something. Very often when people have a question about a 5-6-year-old, it's because they don't have older children, and they were hoping about 5-6 already, like, what am I supposed to be doing with this kid? When you have 18-year-old children, Shadiq, or trying to get your girl into a high school or seminary, and your 2-year-old or your 8-year-old has an issue, you look like it's trivial. I once heard a mechanic saying that his older children were pointing out to him, Tati, look, you know, at little brother, the Ben Zakinim, if I would have done that when I was, you know, I would have never gotten away with it. And now, look, he's doing that, he's turning over the house, nothing's happening. You know, the simple understanding of that is that, you know, as you grow older, you're mellow and you don't care anymore. It's not that. Very often it's because when that's your oldest child, you think the issue. When children get older, you realize that the small stuff. Anyway, I don't want to get off a tangent. The idea of a 5-6-year-old issue is so often like, 5-6, let it pass, it'll be okay. Don't try to form or fix your kid at 5-6. Be more busy connecting with them and making them feel like $1 million and the smartest kid in the world, and you'll accomplish more than trying to get a kid to be a little faster paced. Repeating once from Manal, like, Malamed him to teach kids if they didn't have kids at home that age. In other words, a Malamed whose oldest kid is 10, he wouldn't let him teach 12-year-olds. And the reasoning was because if your oldest is 10 and you're teaching 12-year-olds, you think they're already grown up. When you have a 12-year-old at home, you realize he's still a baby, and now you look differently at the kids. And I heard this from a Malamed who was working for me. He said, it's so true. It's so true. He heard it from him. He was working on a different chayder, and he went through that process of first teaching kids that were older than his own, and then as his own child reached that age, he realized, oh, wow, I thought these kids are really grown up. I see now at home that this 12-year-old can really tantrum and wake up late and lose his things. You know, and that's what happens when you realize that little kids are little kids. So, you know, sometimes you have to realize that. Somebody mentioned something interesting, and again, I'm not a ruv or a poisik to argue with it, but it was just interesting to me, the halacha that afikoyim has to be eaten in one place. That's the halacha. You can't eat the afikoyim in two different places, because it's actually in a carbon Pesach. So somebody mentioned that, you know, when little kids walk around with afikoyim, you have to teach them to stay in one place.
and let's not get carried away. The halach is that you shouldn't eat dafikoim in the two places. You still eat if you do, but you shouldn't move around. But the kid, usually the kid is walking around eating afikoim, and he's not eating be'asaiba, and he doesn't know much about what he's doing anyway. He just took a piece of matzah. Sometimes we get too, controlling of the little kids without realizing how little they are. So that's very, very important. So again, some things have to be addressed. There are issues that shouldn't be overlooked. There are things that are issues that should be addressed when children are young, whether it's a speech issue or a specific challenge. But then, it's funny, I mentioned this the best, that people that go like to one extreme or the other. There are people who would never address any issue and think everything will pass and nothing's a problem. Then there are people who, all the kids are in therapy and they all have issues, and this one's ODD and this one's special needs and this one and this problem and that problem. And it's important to address things. So sometimes you just have to talk to someone and make sure you're not misinterpreting a simple immaturity that a child will grow out of, and there's nothing about it. So back to the question. If I understood correctly, a 5-6-year-old who's a little more relaxed, I think it's just fine. I think it would be great if when she becomes a mother and a grandmother, she should remain relaxed. I think that would be wonderful. But it might be something to get some clarity on and discuss with someone who can know the specifics and the details. Just make sure that you're not applying this incorrectly. Sometimes you see something, you don't know what you're seeing. The joke about the guy who was experimenting with the frogs, he caught off one leg and he saw they jumped a little. He couldn't jump so much when he screamed jump, and he only jumped a little bit. He caught off another leg, jumped a little less. He's writing now, as you take off the legs, the frog can't jump so far anymore. He caught off the last leg and he screams jump, jump, and the frog didn't move. And he writes, when I caught off the last leg, the frog lost his hearing. That's so often when you deal with problems, people like totally misinterpret what's happening. So you think that the child has a problem, well, there's really nothing wrong, and it could be very normal. So it's normal for a frog not to jump when they don't have legs, and it could be very normal for a child to be a little more relaxed. So, just that. I'll end off saying that you shouldn't fight the school when teachers or principals or schools bring up issues, even when they're wrong. You don't want to fight them, you don't want to prove them wrong, you want to thank them for their advice and suggestions, you want to even maybe convince them how much their suggestion or the fact that they brought a certain amount of awareness actually helped, so they feel good and they feel you're taking them seriously. You don't want to be the one that's being obnoxious. But I had this with parents who, again, I don't like saying this in public because then people get upset at me, but somebody who's you got a call like the first day from a teacher, the daughter's so obnoxious, I want you to tell her, and she can't come back to school if she doesn't. And you're like, what do I do? Is that what I'm supposed to tell my kid? The first day of school, the teacher called about her. And my advice was, okay, a little unconventional, tell your child that the teacher called to say how brilliant she is, how impressed she is with her, and how much she appreciates having her in her class. And that's what happened. And a few days later, you got a call from the teacher and said, wow, I appreciate that you spoke to your child when I told you, because she's a different kid. Now, of course she's a different kid. She knows the teacher loves her. The first day she was intimidated and wasn't sure the teacher loved her. So sometimes it's important to address a teacher with respect and a principle, and then to use your better judgment and understand when to make an issue out of a tissue and when not. So let's end with that. And accept children for what they are, and understand, like we started off with, that a good word could do so much, and a negative word could do so much. Sometimes when we just use the encouragement and make a child feel like $1 million, we'll make them all thrive with Hashem's help, and bring out the best of every child. That's Hashem.